Welcome to the Starving Artist Podcast. This is your host, Rocky Cotard, and we are very excited to have you with us. This week, we will be meeting with Destiny Palmer, a very amazing artist in the Boston area, painter, abstract artist, and various things. Please tune in with us, and we will have a wonderful show with Destiny Palmer.
All right, y'all. This is Professor X. And we're going to kick it to our next co-host.
What's up, everybody? My name is Katrina, and I'm looking forward to another great podcast today.
Sure. I'm Destiny Palmer. Many people will know me as Miss Palmer in many, many respects. I'm an abstract painter and educator, and I'm curiously looking at ways to define what an artist looks like these days.
So, to kind of get things started, I think a really vital place to start with a lot of different artists and really your pieces of works and things like that. I love to get to know the beginnings. And so what is your beginnings in the art field? What kind of got you there?
Sure. So I actually went to an arts high school, and I was pretty... So I went to an arts high school and a regular high school at the same time. So I'm originally from Connecticut, and there's a program there called the Educational Center for the Arts. So what you would do is go to your primary high school for your core classes, math, science, whatever. Then you would leave and you would have like your afternoon day. So from like 7 to 12, you were at your regular high school. Then from 1 to 4, you were at this arts high school doing whatever programming. And so I had started that my sophomore year, and I had been drawing and things of that nature before that, but this was the first time that I was having like real studio time. So I was taking these like 3-hour studio classes and diving into like contemporary art in a way. And then within that year, I started, there was a whole bunch of like opportunities within that. And I started interning as a docent at an art gallery. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I was doing some community stuff with my primary high school. And I think that's like, if I were to think back about where all of my bases are, the interest in community, the interest in art, the interest in like creating spaces to have dialogue with art. I don't know, my interest of teaching came from there, but like, mm-hmm. It's very clear that it started there. And that was like my primary start. Like I was painting and sculpting. There's an installation that's still up at my old arts high school. I'm just like painting over it. It's really horrible. Let it go. But part of me is like, that's pretty cool. Cause like maybe one day I'll be like really famous and like, they'll be like, look at her ugly like installation. So that was like that's like the beginning for me. And from there, you like, you know, that school at ECA gave me like an insight into the arts world in like so many ways. Like I saw Matthew Barney's films for the first time and had no idea what I was seeing. We went to New York for the, like, not my first time, but I had like went to New York to see art for the first time with them. I was meeting like contemporary and local artists at the time. I was painting all the time and really committing to like, mm-hmm. what does it mean to be in the studio just for like at like a couple of hours? Mm-hmm. But that's where it began for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. And I think I definitely connect with that too, because I still remember like applying to an art school when I was like, you know, in middle school, and I don't know where it came from. I just started making random art, and granted, I wasn't really making it seriously in middle school, but for some reason, when I got to high school, having the influence of, you know, teachers, you know, mentors, different people who were passionate, about the arts kind of easily brought me to that same space as well. So I definitely connect there. I think, so the next kind of, space I want to go to is, in terms of abstraction, one of the things that make your work really stand out other than the so many other things, is the piece on abstraction and your focus on color. And, How did that come about? I know I've heard it before, and I think it's one story that I don't really get tired of hearing, just because of the pathways. But I think it's just really helpful for our listeners to be able to hear that as well. So how'd you find your way into abstraction?
I think about this often. It's not that I like, mm-hmm. and I think about my relationship to figuration. Like I love figuration. I like when other people do it, and I'm really like, I can really appreciate the craft and how it's made. And the thought, I just don't know that I liked myself doing it. Mm. Right. Like I just wasn't like, I could do it. And then I was like, okay, well that's it. Right. Like I made the face and I made the background. That's what you're supposed to do. I did it like, you know, and I just consistently fought that. And I fought it through undergrad too. So like, I had a painting to drawing class, and my professor like would give us homework. And one week I'd bring in this like really abstract drawing. Mm-hmm. The next week I'd bring in like this really figurative drawing, and he'd be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. And then I'd go back and forth, and he's like, can you pick one? And I was like, I can't, like, it's hard. It's and like, it's really hard to kind of like base yourself in abstraction because so many people are figurative. So many people are representational, but like my interest with color came from old stuff. Like it comes from, you know, my grandmother had a cerulean blue Chevy. Like it was a bright blue car. It was weird. You couldn't miss it. We had like a bright blue house. Like, and so you like recognize color in your space when no one else has it. Like every other house was white and gray and all of mm-hmm. those things. And then my mom and my grandmother were both seamstress. Like they both sewed a whole bunch of things. So we were consistently at the fabric store. Mm-hmm. So that like was completely ingrained in me, like pattern and color, and like, I didn't know really where that was going to come from or like where it was going to go. Mm-hmm. And then I got to UCA in high school and my first painting class, and I was really amped. And I get there and the teacher's like, so everybody, we're going to start painting and we're going to teach you how to stretch canvas. And I was like, yeah, I'm ready. And he's like, okay, we're going to go around and share what everybody's going to paint. And I was like, okay, great. I like know what I'm going to paint. I'm going to paint color in line. Like I was just like, cause that just makes, and I don't know why that made sense to me, mm-hmm. but like color in line. I didn't know how it was going to go together. And I happened to be at the end of the circle. So like everybody went, you know, and everybody's like, I'm going to paint. I like distinctly remembered like, I'm going to paint my sister as a ballerina. I'm going to paint. And I was like, oh God, I'm wrong. Like what I'm thinking is wrong. Like, you know, it's just everybody had some representational object or thing or person that they were painting. And I was just like, you cannot say line and color. Like that's clearly not the assignment. You didn't get it. Like turn around, say something else. And so I was just like, I'm going to paint sunsets. Right? Like, that's what I'm gonna paint. And everybody's like, yeah, okay. But like I really consistently had a yearning to figure out color and line. And so like when I think about that painting, it was very much like an interest in minimalism, mm-hmm. an interest in hard edge painting, and an interest in Kandinsky. Like I didn't even know who Kandinsky was at that mm-hmm. time. I was more interested in the connection that people had to art. So I was really interested in curation, and I was really mm-hmm. interested in like the role that the curator played between mm-hmm. the artist and the audience. And I felt like they were secret keepers, right? Because mm-hmm. they got to like meet with artists one-on-one yeah. and learn all the like nitty gritty. And then they got to talk to the audience, and the audience is really only interacting with the curator or like whoever's mm-hmm. in the gallery.
I kind of want to get back to what you were saying about the minimalism mm-hmm. and the Kandinsky, because that kind of goes into design. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your paintings, we were looking at your paintings, and you know, you have this plan where that, you know, everything is kind of designed, and you have these beautiful motifs with color,
intersecting with these lines and purposeful, you know, right angles and triangles. And I'm always, I know Katrina is very fascinated with abstract, and I've always tried to wrap my head around abstract. So how do you define yourself as like, what type of abstract painter do you say you are?
Can you give me an example?
Well, when you mentioned Kandinsky, I kind of went back to like the Bauhaus. So those teachers were about like self-expression during the world wars. And so that type of abstract was kind of like expression through, I don't want to say reality, or like their circumstances. So they just express themselves through paint. So do you feel like it's more about expression or something else?
I don't know that I'm going to align myself with like a particular group of abstract painters, because I think I'm borrowing from so many groups. But I will say there's something really cool about being crafty about abstraction. So I get to put in my paintings whatever I want to put in my paintings: political, gender, race, nothing, right? Like, all of that gets to go in my paintings, and I don't have to say anything about it, right? Because people don't typically dive into it and try to dissect it as if it's a language. And so all of these abstract art, the history of abstraction comes from like understanding abstraction as a language. And as much as like one kind of defines it in one particular way, like the next that comes along pulls from who just came out. And then, you know, then they're like, well, it could look like this too. And so like, there's this history where people are like, it looks like this. And someone's like, yeah, but it could look like this too. And it could look like, you know, and so like, I like abstraction because I don't have to explain it. And in this body that I look like, we are consistent, like I'm consistently having to explain or like counter the narrative about who people expect me to be. And so my paintings, I feel like, get to live a different life. They get to like tell a story, or they get to be really decorative, right? Like they exist in both of those histories. You know, like I love the Bauhaus. I love the method of understanding how to learn. I love Kandinsky because he's talking about the relationship to sound and mark making. You know, I like Hans Hofmann because he's talking about balance and depth. You know, I like, you know, Helen Frankenthaler. I like artists who are staining canvases and like, you know, but I also like people who are building up canvases and marks. So like, I also am just pulling from all of those histories. And learning, but abstraction is a language, right? Like it's built around, you can't make abstraction and then say you like completely hate figurative, because you understand mark making through a figure. Like that's how you understand that. You also understand mark making through writing, because, you know, you write all the time, your signature, your, you know, those are all methods. To writing, to literally making a mark. And so like your understanding about like light and color come from like understanding your space and like understanding like brightness and darkness and like and value in that particular way, or hues in that particular way. You understand color based on your own context. So if you're like always in gray spaces, then your counter to that is like, I need a lot of bright color. If you're around a lot of bright color, then maybe you're mimicking the space that you're in. So like abstraction is just the language in which we exist in. I just think a lot of the time people are like, it's so hard to enter it and figure out the language, the like context for the language that somebody's talking about.
Yeah. I think one thing that kind of, like jumps out from like quite a few things jump out, but I think when you mention like your interaction with abstraction and how you're able to speak on so many different things going on simultaneously on the same canvas. And I think like when we were kind of looking over some of your work, thinking about it, I would say it's a little elusive, which is fine because that's in the like abstraction of things. It's like a community struggle, I would say. Mm-hmm. Particularly like the piece that he's hovering, They Reminisce Over You. Mm-hmm. Like the dark kind of marks that are very bold, you know, mixed with the blue kind of thing. Like it's just, I'm looking at it, but I'm seeing way more. So I wonder, is that something that that kind of just happens, or is it something that, you know, you're controlling? Obviously you're the artist, so I imagine you have that level of control, but I wonder if there are periods where you may not, and you just kind of allow it to just be.
I mean, I think it goes back and forth. So like my work changed drastically, let's say like five or six years ago. And I was making a lot of hard edge paintings before that. But the content that I was interested in terms of color was still something that I was interested in. I feel like it's the way that we interact with one another. Like I'm really curious about, let's say like this dynamic, and trying to describe it in a painting means that like the way that I might represent my relationship with two people that I'm meeting today versus somebody that I've known for a long time and seen their growth might be represented in a mark, might be represented in a particular color. And then what you're looking for are like the two marks together, like those two separate colors together. Let's say blue and orange, which are really easy. So like blue and orange, when they're bumped up against one another, they're so like, it is intense, right? Like they're just not trying to have a conversation. They're just kind of polar opposites. And then sometimes they have a rhythm depending on their like value. So if they're like lighter or darker. And so I think about that in relationship to people. So if you were to think about every mark in my paintings being a person and people trying to get like be together. One of my professors in grad school said, you know, your paintings remind me of like a group of people at a party. And I was like,
yes, the best example,
right? Like if you think about the different dynamics of people at a party, you know, like that's it. Like there's just things that are bumping up against one another. There are things that are literally like trying to move past something else. There are people that are struggling for like, I want to be seen and I don't want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I like that kind of like relationships. I've kind of sat with that. Mm-hmm. You know, but the work, you know, ebbs and flows. So like there might be something that I'm really interested in exploring that starts one painting. And then I'm like, oh, that's something really cool. And then it starts like snowballs into like 10 other paintings. And so there's usually, I don't know, maybe like at least 10 ongoing paintings in my studio, if not more than that, which is horrible, but like also kind of cool.
Well, Rocky kind of has that same.
I think I think I probably got that from you, Ms. Palmer, to be really honest, because I was at some point, I think you were like, hey, Rocky, I worked on like, you know, a couple of paintings at a time. And then I was like, so you mean to tell me I could get 5 paintings out of the same kind of work ethic and the time frame? And then now it's kind of like, oh no, I have to finish all of them.
I do like the fact that you have like all this energy. You know, just looking at all of the paintings and the grids, you have all this energy. And then when you're thinking you might know what it is, you know, I hover over something like It's Not So Nice. And like, oh, wow, that's very catchy. And then you got one, you know, Mind Your Cues. Talk a little bit about, you know, having these titles, you know, naming these things. Like, how does that process go? Do you have the name first and then you kind of work with it? Or is it kind of just come to you? Like, I'm very curious about that.
It's like a combination of what's happening while I'm making the painting. And then like finally, like refining it by the end. But like I was a untitled number 53, untitled number 54 for a very long time.
And it no.
people up the wall. Right. And so, you know, I found that like I needed to revisit titles because if I wanted to have clues in the work, that the titles were going to be really helpful for me. Mm-hmm. So I can talk about color and that can be a clue. I can talk about pattern and that's a clue. And I can make allusions to like parts of history. That's a clue, but the title usually helps bring it together. And usually like the like paintings are like, you know, together. So you'll see like some other things that are really hitting hard with the work, but it comes after. And it's usually that I'm doing a lot of research for other bodies of work. So the more conceptual work. And while I'm researching like that in American history, I'm then making a responsive painting to that information that I'm trying to process. And so that, and I'm usually watching some historical something while I'm, you know, working. It's a lot of research.
The Starving Artist Podcast is a band of super talented, sophisticated rock stars. We aim to challenge ourselves and the status quo. Now, the Starving Artist Podcast Network is expanding nationally from New York City to Portland, Oregon, and broadcasting on local TV, courtesy of Urban Media Art Studio right here in Malden, Massachusetts. Please support the movement by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Starving Artist Podcast, and follow us on Instagram at starving_artist_podcast. You can also find us on Patreon and listen to our podcast on Anchor, Apple, Google, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Rocky, Xavier, and I want to sincerely thank all who have been loyal ambassadors of the Starving Artist Podcast Network. But we ain't done, y'all. Stay tuned and check out the latest and greatest. This is your girl, Katrina, and I'm out of here.
Hello, everybody. We are back on the Starving Artist Podcast. Thank you for staying with us through the commercial break. I'm sure you were entertained. We are back with Destiny Palmer. And we had a couple questions really having to do with mentorship for you for this section, because we know how important it is in the art world to have mentorship. And I think when I thought of you for this interview, I think you're such a great example of somebody who's a mentor and also who introduced me to the concept of having a mentor. So I wonder, to kind of start things off, who are your mentors?
So loaded.
That is tough. I'll say this. Like I often thought of mentors as someone who did exactly the same thing as you. And so for a while I rejected a lot of mentor types, because I was like, well, you don't like paint abstractions. So like, you don't know. Like,
don't know me.
Don't know me. You can't help me. From. I was young and really immature, and I had to do a lot of reflecting, because I think I've had awesome mentors, and I can't say one particular one. Mm-hmm. I think there are people who've like showed me what like strong work ethic was, and like they weren't artists. And I owe that to like both my grandmother and my mom. But I was like really curious about how people were, you know, making connections and building bridges, regardless if they were like making work or not. And I was always really curious about that. And I've had people who were like patient, you know, like really patient with me, because I was really stubborn as a high school student, like really stubborn. So I don't have one in particular, but I just remember like being in awe of people who were like making things happen. You know, someone that I think of as a mentor was a curator at ArtSpace in New Haven. And she's now the like lead curator at MassMoCA. And so like watching her kind of like grow and like do her thing in like so many ways is like kind of awesome, you know? And I think about a lot of people that I've like just needed to like ask advice from, you know. Barrington Edwards was a huge mentor of mine, like, especially when it came to teaching. Like, I had no idea what I was doing, but like he knew what I was doing before I knew what I, you know, like Kathleen Marsh, and my peers. Like, I had a lot of peers who were like really interested in what they were making. So I don't have one particular person. I think I just had a really awesome community of people doing a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really agree with that, because I think, you know, you're certainly one of my connects when it comes to the art field as well. But I think there's kind of like, you know, learning to build a network of people to essentially kind of help you to know what you don't know. Because I think the art field, it's unwritten in a way. Yeah. It's like the steps to getting through it, because I'm still very, I mean, I don't know what the case is for somebody who has gone much further than I am, but I'm still kind of like, oh, I'm actually still right in the middle, not even in the middle. I'm figuring this out as we speak.
I think that's why I like it so much too. Cause mm-hmm. there's no, you're supposed to go this way and you know, you do these steps along the way, and like everyone, you figure it out as you go along. And so, and everyone's personality is different. So, you know, what works for one person may not work for someone else. So that comes with, you know, time, experience. Destin, you mentioned that you were a little, did you say stubborn or you just
said? I was stubborn.
Okay. Yeah.
I wrote after teaching high school, my high school teacher, and I said, I am so sorry. Like, I just was like, my bad. Like,
that's so honest. That's nice. That's very yeah. nice. I don't think I would. I'd just be like, ah, oh, that's the past, you know.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, listen, we grew up.
That's nice.
I think like Xavier was saying, when you're in the art field, there is no clear cut path necessarily. Like if you're going to be a doctor, you know, you have to take these courses, you have to go to this school to get a degree, and then you're going to go into whatever field you choose, or, you know, any other profession, there's usually a clear cut path to follow. But with the art, it's so broad, and you kind of find your way as you're in it and what you enjoy, what you're good at, and just kind of create your own path. And so that's what makes it a little bit more interesting, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And just speaking on mentors, I feel like, you know, it's that pay it forward mentality. You know, you kind of brought out, you know, the teachers that helped you. I think, you know, Rocky and Katrina know about, you know, my Miss Berkeley. You know, if it wasn't for her, she wouldn't have put me over the edge, and I wouldn't have looked at pre-college, and, you know, I wouldn't have looked at these things being in the inner city. So, you know, mentorship has a solid part, you know, of me. So it's that pay it forward type of mentality.
And I mean, I think one thing that, like, because I was having this conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and it's not necessarily in the, you know, visual arts field. It's more in the sense of like writing. I'm in this space of creativity where I'm kind of like, yeah, if it's, you know, something that has nothing to do with what I'm doing, I'm interested in just learning about mm-hmm. it, you know, if it's music, if it's dance, like it all kind of factors in. And I was talking to this friend, and then she was kind of like, you know, I write poems. I was like, what? You write poems? I didn't know this. And then she was like, yeah, I kind of started because when I was in school, one of my teachers told me I was a good writer. And I was like, wow, everybody deserves to hear that. Like, mm-hmm. No matter the field, like if you're into the creative field, you really deserve to hear that because it kind of frees you to create in a different way. And so that's how I kind of get the sense of mentorship. It's like just expressing that sense of trust in their ability to express themselves. And then in that way, you free them. Yeah. So thank you very much, Ms. Palmer, for spending this time with us. Super honored to be able to hear some of the your thoughts on some of our questions and to really take the time to speak on your amazing work.
Also, let us know where people can find you and connect with you.
Oh, yes, please. Thank you, Gina.
Sure. My website is now destinypalmerstudio.com and DS Palmer for Instagram. And those are the two main places that I can be found.
And she also has a lot of awesome murals, many different places.
Yeah.
All right. So this is Rocky signing off.
Professor Rex signing off.
Destiny Palmer signing off.
This is Katrina signing off the Starving Artist Podcast.
Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
Woohoo! All right, we did it.
So confused. We kept doing this to the end.